You're listening to the Queensland Country Hour on ABC Radio Queensland.
Well, the writs have been issued and the Queensland election is well and truly underway with a great deal of focus on the economy. The COVID-19 pandemic has placed Australia into a recession, and the same week as the federal budget has been handed down, industry is looking to all state political parties to reveal their plans to ensure economic recovery. So, let's go through what the major parties have promised so far. Jodie Gundas, what's the ALP's plan if it's re-elected later this month?
Well, Ali, back in August, Premier Anastasia Palaszczuk released the Queensland Economic Recovery Plan, which included $8 billion in recovery funding. For small business, there's a $200 million Works for Queensland recovery package to support local jobs and local governments with funding for building productive infrastructure. There's up to $100 million for small business grants, half of that funding allocated to small businesses in regional Queensland. For agriculture, it says it's supporting digital transformation in the agribusiness and food industries, reinvigorating trade relationships and diversification. $5.5 million for digital transformation in agribusiness. That's to develop integrated supply chains that improve traceability, biosecurity and food safety. $5 million for reinvigorated trade ag trade relationships, supporting e-commerce, virtual trade facilitation in key markets. Also looking at coordinating demand for additional regular air freight services. And there's $2 million for agribusiness diversification assistance, building capability, exploring potential diversification opportunities for agribusiness business, including for tourism. So just on water, Ali, the Premier first raised the Bradfield scheme in October last year and offered to work with the Commonwealth Government on a revised scheme, but has since said the ALP isn't waiting any longer and is itself re-examining a Bradfield scheme concept. An independent expert panel chaired by Professor Ross Garnett will conduct an examination of the Bradfield Inland Irrigation Scheme. For the resources sector, the ALP says it will support the continued diversification of the technology, the resources sector, through exploration and the commercialisation of mining equipment technology and services businesses, startups and innovators. $10 million for New Economy Minerals Initiative. And that's about where we are with the Labor policy. Oh, I forgot the $23 million for renewable energy training facility, Ali.
Jodie, we'll settle up. What about the LNP?
The LNP, Ali, says it'll establish an agency to kickstart major stimulus projects across the state in a similar way that a reconstruction authority takes charge of a disaster. It says its economic recovery agency will operate like that reconstruction authority, coordinating a program of works under the wide-ranging powers of the Coordinator General. The economic recovery agency's first 100-day action plan would include the establishment of the Queensland Dam Company to progress six regional dams, including delivering the new Bradfield scheme, fixing Paradise Dam, reducing water prices for Sunwater irrigators by almost 20%, fast-tracking the $18 million off-stream water storage near Maryborough, and doubling the value of agricultural production by 2035. So, Ali, doubling, this is the goal, to double the value of agricultural production by 2035 from $18 billion to $30 billion, and then doubling it again to $60 billion by 2045. The LNP says it's committed to growing agriculture in Queensland by reducing the costs of critical input costs and bad regulations that impact the profitability, productivity and jobs through the ag supply chain. When it comes to mining and resources, the LNP says it plans to unlock the full potential of the state's resources sector by implementing a 10-year royalties guarantee, establishing a new Queensland Resources Industry Commissioner, initiating a faster approvals process, providing $8 million for state-sponsored exploration for minerals in the Northwest Minerals Province, conducting an energy audit to reduce energy prices in the Northwest Minerals Province, and establishing a new Queensland Infrastructure Fund to collect and invest all royalties from the Galilee Basin in new infrastructure across Queensland. But Ali, my disclaimer here is this is a very comprehensive list, as you've just heard. But there are other things too. We've hit the real key ones that relate to agriculture and resources. You can check, people can check the ALP and LNP websites for everything else.
Thanks, Jo. It's a good caveat to have. And, of course, no doubt both sides have more promises to make as election day nears. But let's hear from industry itself. The lobby for the state's biggest export sector has most certainly become involved. This week, the Queensland Resources Council says it's not going to back down after it launched an advertising campaign urging voters to preference the Greens last. As a result, BHP and Origin have suspended their memberships, saying they don't support campaigns targeting specific political parties. So while the Queensland Resources Council CEO, Ian McFarlane, has defended that messaging, he's also emphasised the role he felt the sector could play in economic recovery. Mr McFarlane acknowledged that COVID-19 disruptions have been difficult to navigate, but added there were positives, like his belief that a post-pandemic resources sector will see less fly-in, fly-out and more miners living full-time in regional Queensland.
We're hopeful that when COVID's over, there'll be more people living in local communities. That's been the outcome of this. You can't rent a house in Rockhampton or Mackay at the moment. People have moved from interstate to those positions. More than half of our chief executives in our latest survey have said that they'll be employing local people rather than interstate FIFO going forward. And that's all good news for regional Queensland. So we are working with our workers to ensure that we can hold them together, particularly in terms of their mental health, until they can get back with their families, and hopefully the borders will come down soon and they can return home. But there has been a significant upside, and that's been both the economic boost to Queensland of having the industry still going and the fact that in the longer term there'll be more people living in the regions.
Will it be a resources-led recovery in Queensland, do you think?
Well, look, it'll be a primary industry-led recovery. It'll be the mining, gas and farming industries that get Queensland out of this mess. Unfortunately for the tourism industry, it'll be a little while before that industry gets back on its feet. But the good news for them is that there'll be more than a million Australians home for Christmas this year, so they've got to get a slice of that market if the borders are open. But the resources industry is well placed. We are still producing. Prices are a little bit difficult. But for the 372,000 people who rely on the resources industry, the good news is that the outlook is solid, and we'll be there to help Queensland recover and be the biggest exporter, as we are now, of commodities out of Queensland.
Perhaps a case study could be the Olive Downs mine just recently announced. What's that going to mean for the economy and for Queenslanders?
Well, it means a lot for regional Queensland. It's over 1,000 jobs. It's over $1 billion in terms of royalties to the state government. So that's royalty taxes that pay for doctors and hospitals and nurses and teachers and schools and highways. All of those things that the Queensland economy rely on in terms of producing exports out of Queensland. So Olive Downs is a prime coking coal mine. It's essential to have coking coal for steel. There is no alternative to making steel other than using iron ore and coking coal. So it's something that has a very strong future.
Just with regard to the state election, the Queensland Resources Council has shown its colours, pardon the pun, and has had ads to preference the Greens last. So we know where the council sits on that measure. But what about the policies of the other two sides?
Well, what's caught our eye is that both parties have given agreement to a close relationship with the resources industry going forward. Your listeners would have noticed, particularly the Premier, has spent a lot of time in coal mines and hard rock mines and in regional towns in the last 4 or 5 days. She's given us a commitment that she'll work closely with the QRC and the Resources Council going forward. In that commitment, she's provided a number of undertakings that we've requested in terms of consultation and normal process. But importantly, she has also made it clear that resources are part of Queensland's future. Deb Frecklington has been even stronger and not only made those commitments, but in terms of ensuring that the industry has the investment certainty it needs going forward, that there will be a 10-year hold on royalty rates. Royalties in Queensland are the highest in Australia, and in terms of royalty taxes, we last year paid $5.3 billion. That's a fair amount. What we want to do, though, is get more Olive Downs and get more investors. To do that, we need investment certainty, so we need proper regulatory processes, streamlining. Both parties have announced that. As I said, we need consultation, but we also need certainty around taxes, and We're still working with the Palaszczuk government to get that commitment for the next term of government, but at the moment we are a long way down the road to ensuring that the resources industry is able to help Queensland recover and supply those tens of thousands of extra jobs we're going to need in the recovery phase.
That's Ian McFarlane, the CEO of the Queensland Resources Council. I spoke with him a bit earlier this week. But what about key industries like manufacturing and agriculture? A couple of days ago, I sat down with Cotton Australia's general manager, Michael Murray, and director of manufacturing company TTQ Agriculture, G. Hudson. He started by giving us an insight into his company based in Toowoomba.
TTQ manufactures farm machinery. The focus in Australia used to be actually cotton farm machinery, but has recently expanded into cattle farmers and broadacre farmers. I must admit that the COVID impact has been a lot less than the drought impact has. So we were coming off, well, we still are fairly drought impacted, and that had a severe impact on the business. COVID's arrived and that's actually shut down our overseas markets. But at the same time, as there's some water in Australia, things have picked up a little bit here.
Michael Murray from Cotton Australia, same scenario perhaps?
Yeah, very similar story. Internationally, COVID has really smashed demand for cotton, as it has for a lot of other commodities. So the price today is about 20% less than what it was 12 months ago. But in terms of day-to-day stuff, you know, our growers are out doing what they do, but it's the same, the drought. People sort of say, we've come to the end of the drought. Well, that may be sort of true in some areas, but there's other areas that are really, you know, still crying out for rain. And everyone needs at least some. So that'll be the biggest difference for us if this promised La Nina turns up.
Absolutely, all dependent on the weather. But looking at the state election and looking at COVID recovery and what the cotton industry's role is in terms of that recovery, what do you see that as being?
Well, hopefully we'll have a dual recovery running side by side, drought and COVID. And I guess what we can do is if we get the rain, you know, we can really stimulate that economy in the bush. You know, we're tracking at the moment nationally for a 2.1 million bale crop compared to us 600,000 last season. So we're heading back in the right direction, but it'll still be a small crop, but there's plenty of room for that to grow. So that's what we want to concentrate on, is getting that rainfall and being able to grow the crop. That'll boost employment, that'll bring more people back into the bush and get that expenditure going, and hopefully drive world demand.
And what are the expectations in each valley?
In most areas, the cotton planters are in the ground today. Up in the Central Highlands that they planted some time ago, but their crop is very, very small this year because of virtually no water in Fairburn Dam. In the Dawson Valley, things are pretty good, very reliable area. Pretty good out in the Darling Downs, not a record crop, but certainly not a poor crop. And a bit of a similar story out in the Lower Boulogne, where they'll have some good areas planted, not records, but very good. And then unfortunately in the Border Rivers area, very poor outlook at the moment, and just everyone's waiting for this La Nina to arrive.
G. Hudson, regional manufacturing, what role will it play in terms of stimulating the economy and in terms of a COVID recovery situation?
Regional manufacturing is very strong. Toowoomba is a powerhouse of manufacturing, not just in agricultural manufacturing as we are in, and therefore in terms of employing people and spending money and stimulating the economy, we're going to be right in it. We've got some challenges though. I mean, I've speaking to fellow business owners in Toowoomba, we actually are short of staff, believe it or not. You know, that might sort of curtail some of that growth plan we have.
You've cited that there are some challenges, but in terms of value to regional Australia, I mean, you can speak from your business's perspective, but in terms of growth and of value, what could you see in 2021 and into the future?
There's huge potential for growth. One of the things limiting small, medium businesses is the access to funding. The federal government's had a little stab at trying to fix that. It hasn't actually translated. But I know the Queensland government have actually announced an investment fund, which is a good step in that direction. So there's small businesses out there. There's latent demand and there's capacity constraints. But they're, you know, we're a pretty innovative bunch, and I think we're going to try and find a way around it no matter what happens. Where the demand from the farmers is there, we'll just do everything we can to satisfy that demand. If the overseas market comes back online, then we will try and do that at the same time. But be interesting.
Michael Murray, what about the cotton industry? Obviously, add water, and that's a big solution. But in terms of the value it can add to the Queensland economy, What do you have any figures to put to that?
In a good year, we produce about $700 million to $1 billion farm gate for Queensland and employ 2,000 or 3,000 people. In a poor year, it's going to be far, far less than that. So, you know, if we get water, you know, we'll be looking to employ people. And like G, we'll probably struggle a little bit to find people. And we would like to see some more money invested in training. And that's one of the things that we're looking for from you know, whoever wins government to invest in our agricultural training. But, you know, we can gear up pretty quickly and, you know, play our role for recovery.
Looking at what policies have been put down and how it'll affect your industry, G. Hudson, what's piqued your interest?
There's a big drive for take the next stage in manufacturing, advanced manufacturing, manufacturing 4.0, or whatever buzzwords they're using for it. As I've said before, I think the fundamental missing part of that is the funding to actually make it happen. I personally believe that grants are the wrong way to do that. Having governments just give money out is problematic. You know, the rest of the constituents want to know who you've given it to, why you've given it to them, and therefore seed funding is a better way to do it. Lend money that you'll get back. Now, as I said, I've seen an announcement from the current Queensland government. I don't know whether that will happen. I mean, governments are often very good at announcing things that never happen. I haven't seen anything from any of the opposition parties in Queensland to suggest that they may be thinking the same way. But, I mean, the election campaign's really just started. And I'd be interested to see that they understand what drives small business.
What about you, Michael Murray? What has piqued your interest in what has been announced so far from the political parties leading into the election?
Not really seeing that much ag-specific at the moment. Of course, the big one which both parties have committed to is to have a good look at the Bradfield scheme. Now, to be quite honest, I don't know whether the Bradfield scheme makes sense or not, but it's certainly not the only water infrastructure project out there, so it might be a good benchmark against others. So, yeah, it will be interesting to see what comes up in that area. I guess, frustratingly, there's a whole range of sort of relatively small taxes that impact people's ability for business in farming. So one of my pet bugbears is that if a farmer takes out crop insurance, he's paying a 9% stamp duty to the government. Well, that's a real disincentive to be reliant, self-reliant. It's a tax that's been removed in other states, so there's a state-by-state competitive issue there. So we would like to see that one gone. There's still some major, I mean, everyone suffers from high electricity prices, but there's a couple of real inequities when it comes to the cotton industry, particularly around cotton ginning. And again, a comparison state by state. Just one to keep in mind, in a very small year, a cotton gin on the New South Wales side of the border at Mungindi, just to keep their power connected, will cost them $36,000 a year. That same gin at St George, it's $250,000. So those sort of inequities we would really like to see ironed out in this whole election process.
G. Hudson, you flagged workers before and attracting workers. Do you have some ideas around that? What would help?
Yeah, there's actually a mobility issue. We've got pockets of high unemployment and, you know, there's plenty of commentators saying, oh, we'll just get them to move. That's just not that easy. We've got examples in our workforce of people who have moved, and there are state levers that can be pressed here. Stamp duty is one. If you own a house in an area and you want to move to another area, you've got a fairly substantial stamp duty bill. And if they could defer that stamp duty for that move period, that would help that mobility. The other thing it probably flies under the radar is just the cost of a rental bond. It sounds like a small thing, but a lot of the employees in the manufacturing industry don't really have savings. They live for the weekly check. And, you know, finding a second bond in a new region to be able to move to a new job is actually beyond a lot of them. It's a relatively small amount of money in the grand scheme of things. And I think if the state or even the local councils can get involved in that bond scheme, that would help us, you know, return to a more mobile workforce that we used to have.
In terms of a workforce for the cotton industry, a lot of this is covered by the federal government, but in terms of state initiatives, has anything been announced in that sense? Is there anything that would help?
We're really keen to get a training package up. In New South Wales for the past 3 years, they've had what was called Ag Skill, which was providing specialised training courses to the cotton and grains industry. We're looking to see if we can replicate that in many ways here in Queensland and just provide that targeted training assistance because, you know, as we're hoping to come out of the drought, we will be looking for more employees. Many of them will be unskilled in the industry. It'll be a great opportunity for that employment opportunity and training to grow together.
G. Hudson, will the outcome of the election greatly affect the confidence in your sector? Do you think does it hinge much on that, or are there other factors that weigh more heavily?
Oh, I don't think it'll have a huge impact. Water will always have a bigger impact on the industry. I think, I don't know who's going to win, or it might be a hung parliament. I don't think that will sort of stop people on a day-to-day basis. I'm just keen to make sure that, the political parties don't make this a city versus bush divide, because that's not going to help anyone. I think if they, if we're really going to make progress in Queensland, we have to all literally be in it together. So, whoever wins this has to make sure that there's bridges built between the communities, and that we can all benefit from it. Yeah, I don't think it will stop people. Business people, don't work to a political cycle. They like a bit of security and surety out of a business cycle. We certainly don't want politics to become a change the guard every time and change every policy the previous people had, because that doesn't work, because you waste your time then. So you want a bit of continuity out of them.
And Michael Murray, obviously Cotton Australia as a lobby group is apolitical, but in terms of confidence going forward, what do you think's needed?
Well, what I do know is that whoever forms government on the 1st of November or after the 31st of October, cotton growers will get up in the morning and they'll continue to grow the best, most sustainable cotton in the world. So they'll get on with that, and we'll get on with dealing with whoever is in Parliament.
The point raised by G earlier about the city-country divide, what are your thoughts around that?
I think it exists. I don't think it's malicious. I think just over time we've lost... In the past, most families had some sort of city-country relationship, uncle, aunt in one or the other, and there was that visiting, and that's getting less and less for a whole range of reasons. And people don't understand how rural life works and agriculture works, and in many ways you can't expect them to. I mean, it's not part of their day-to-day. But anything that we can do to improve people's understanding is great, but I also think there's still a lot of residual respect for agriculture among city people. They may not know a lot about the detail, but they understand that farmers are out there every day producing the food and fibre that they need to survive.
That's Michael Murray, the General Manager of Cotton Australia, and you also heard from G Hudson, who's the Director of TTQ Agriculture, based here in Toowoomba. And you can find this and all our other special programs where we focus on key election issues online. If you search Queensland Country Hour latest, it'll take you right there.